Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, the UK's most politically tumultuous tech podcast. Today, I'm joined by Tech World editor Charlotte G to talk about the forced cabinet reshuffle overnight. I'm going to talk to Deputy Reviews Editor at Tech Advisor Henry Burrell about some Surface news from Microsoft. And I'm going to talk to the new joint editor of Macworld UK.
Ew.
Thanks very much.
David Price.
Pleasure to be here.
To talk about Elon Musk and Elon Musk.
Caves.
Yeah.
Yeah. All that stuff.
Let's get on with the show. Charlotte G.
Yep.
It's all kicking off.
It really is. So, yeah. I mean, I'll try and bring this back to technology in some way, given that this is ostensibly a UK Tech Weekly podcast. But obviously, there's been an interesting couple of days in the UK political scene with David Davis resigning quite late on Sunday evening. And then Boris Johnson was going to resign, but then Number 10 said, well, we don't want him anyway. So they kind of pre-leaked. That's not a very nice phrase, but they sort of did that.
That's quite a Trump move.
Yeah,
these
Boris
days,
is pre-leak. Yeah. Not what
Trump does that, doesn't he? It's like, oh, you don't want to come to my party? Well, you're not invited anyway.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty much what they did. So I'm going to resign. Well, we don't care. So what that means is, to bring this back to the world of tech, is that the new Minister for Digital is a man called, drumroll, Jeremy Wright.
Never heard of him. He's never wrong.
He is replacing a man called Matt Hancock, who is now the new health secretary, because Jeremy Hunt is now the new foreign secretary. Yeah. So there's been a lot of people moving around.
And Dominic, just to go full circle, Dominic Raab is the new Brexit secretary, replacing David Davis.
Yes.
And that means that there's a new housing secretary, but no one cares.
Dominic Raab eats exactly the same lunch from Pratt every day.
Is that true?
It is.
What is it? I bet it's the...
Is it the chicken, bacon, baguette?
It is. It's the it actually is. How do you know that? And he has that with fruit and some kind of smoothie. So, yeah.
How do we know what he eats from
It's delicious, but you have to shovel the bacon in with your fingers.
Yeah. All right.
Is that because they try and make it show outside the edges to
demonstrate? They kind of use it like tape on the... as if they were trying to seal it shut with bacon.
Bacon tape. Yeah. I would buy bacon tape.
I would. I'd buy it
every time. And then
This has gone more off the rails than normal.
So, yes. Anyway, we have a new minister in charge of digital, and yeah, there's been a lot of different ministers in charge of this area over the years, and particularly the government digital service. There's been people. I mean, tell me if you've heard of these people.
Okay.
Oliver Dowden.
No.
Okay. Then there was Caroline Noakes.
Yeah.
I feel like you've heard of her.
No.
Ben Gummer.
No.
Who
is
very
he related
much
to John Selwyn Gummer?
Yes.
There you go.
Yes, Ben Gummer.
Oh wait, was he the one that John Selwyn Gummer tried to give his?
Yes, he was.
Burger
he was the son.
He
was
That's
the son.
That's amazing.
Ben Gummer.
He's now a politician. I feel so old.
Yeah, he's now a politician. And Gummer, if you look at, well, I'm just saying, it feels like an appropriate name. That's cool. All I would say. So yes, essentially, it's a bit of chaos.
Well, then, it was Ed Vasey.
Yes, it was
who
Ed Vasey.
Was a sort of he had a. People had mixed reactions to Ed Vasey.
It did.
He did kind of try and take it on. And to be fair to Matt Hancock, who comes into a lot of mockery amongst the tech journalism.
Yes.
Yeah. But he did try at least to get to grips with technology. He built his own app.
He did. The Matt Hancock app. Which is what we were all waiting for.
Yeah.
I remember that. It was a social network, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. Have you Matt Hancocked recently?
Well, I mean, in a sense,
he at least tried to get to grips with his brief, which is better than most.
Yeah, that's true.
Just quickly, before we dig into the credentials of Matthew Wright, whatever they are.
Matthew Wright is Jeremy Wright.
Jeremy Wright.
Before we dig into his credentials or that lack thereof, could we just quickly sort of define what the digital minister does and what the government digital service is? Because not everyone might understand, but the way I understand it is it's kind of just a broad program to modernize the technology at government level.
Yeah. Well, that's what the government it's quite confusing because that's what the government digital service is. However, the Minister for Digital sits within DCMS, the Department for Culture, Media and Sport. Yeah. But the Minister for the Government Digital Service sits within the Cabinet Office.
Yeah.
So separate from DCMS. There has been some talk about bringing that portfolio into DCMS, so it's all in one department. It's slightly confusing. Essentially, the Minister for Digital oversees... I mean, the one thing they do oversee that's kind of fairly important is broadband. But in reality, it's a bit of a sort of, I don't know how to put it. It seems sort of symbolic rather than actually having a huge amount of input. Kind of you'll spend more time looking at things like BBC licensing or stuff like that than you will looking at actual digital stuff.
And in my experience with Hancock, a lot of his job was going to office openings of new tech companies.
Yeah.
A lot of glad handing.
Yeah.
Not a lot of sort of nitty gritty, but more cheerleading the tech sector, and then if a new tech company was coming to the UK, then just bigging up the impact on jobs and saying that London's the fintech capital of the world, just all of that sort of stuff.
Pretty much, that is pretty much what you have to do, sort of be a cheerleader, essentially. I mean, to be honest, there's not really much appetite to do much in Whitehall at the moment, apart from figure out how we're going to do Brexit.
Yeah, which is no time to be doing anything else.
So pretty much, I don't know. Let's all just not worry about this and watch the World Cup.
I just typed digital minister into Twitter.
Yeah.
And a few people pointing out that Jeremy Wright, the new digital minister, has not tweeted since 2015.
Yes.
And that was a retweet of David Cameron of a video of Ed Balls dismissing Labour as a joke.
All right.
He has circa 100 followers.
But does that matter?
It doesn't really matter.
He came into a lot of mockery for this, but he's the former Attorney General, and the Attorney General is not someone that should be tweeting too much.
It's a
legal position. He definitely shouldn't have had a huge social media presence in that role. What's more interesting is whether he embraces it now. And tries to be sort of more present in digital channels, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, he seems like a bit of a, I don't know, he seems like a little bit of a sort of conservative lifer. I don't know, moved around various different positions.
Yeah.
Safe pair of hands.
Future Gammon.
I would say present Gammon, judging from his profile picture on Wikipedia.
Safe pair of hands, though, would be quite nice.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to do anything particularly wild or unpredictable.
As you just said, that this is not the time for them to be doing anything particularly interesting. No. So he just kind of needs to, get to grips with his brief and just get on with it, not do anything stupid.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which sounds like that he's perfect for.
Yeah, pretty much.
He's going to have to get used to the tech press mocking him at every turn, but
he is.
Who really cares?
Yeah, I know, it's true. I mean, in reality, the kind of politicians don't know anything about tech thing. People love going on about it. And it's, okay, most of them don't, but then do most people, normal people know?
It kind of mattered when Amber Rudd didn't know what encryption was.
No, that does matter. Or indeed, #hashing, not understanding what the differences between the two things.
Need to surround themselves with experts.
Yeah, just talk to people who do know what they're doing, and then you'll be fine. But that's all very, very exciting. I can barely contain myself.
Me too. Cool, that's enough government tech chat for one morning. We're going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to talk to Henry about the Surface. Henry.
Yo.
Microsoft Surface tablet.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Have you ever used a Surface?
Yeah, my mate, who I used to live with, had a Surface, and he actually really, really liked it and tried to get me to buy one. But as everyone knows, I'm an Apple guy, so I refused.
Quite right.
Yeah, I refused to listen to him.
Well, Surface, I think it's a really interesting product line. The news is that in the States was announced and will go on sale. Rest of the world yet to be confirmed. The Surface Go, which is the current cheapest Surface you can get. So it looks exactly like the Surface that we've sort of come to expect. The tablet with a kickstand.
Yeah.
That still doesn't come with pen or keyboard in the box. But the tablet is a $399 Surface.
It's not that cheap, is it?
So, yeah.
It's pretty cheap. Surfaces are historically quite high.
So at the moment, the cheapest Surface Pro you can buy in pounds is on sale at
$749.
Oh, okay.
So, and it's normally a grand-ish. But what you obviously get is a much lower end processor. It's a Pentium processor that I actually haven't heard of. So it's going to be, I can't find the name now, sorry, but it's going to be very low end. And the thing that I think, I don't quite know who it's for. So Microsoft was, I think, late into the hardware game anyway. Surface was like quite a cool idea that I think has finally matured with like a decent Surface Pro product, but still one that's above most consumers. And so what they're trying to do now is bring it back down to the iPad level, which is where David comes in.
specifically the new cheap iPad.
Yeah, so new cheap iPad is £319.
Yeah.
But for an iPad, that's pretty good.
Yeah, well, it's a really good deal.
And it doesn't come with an Apple Pencil, but it has Apple Pencil support.
No one wants an Apple Pencil.
Apple Pencil is the best tablet stylus available.
Yeah, but that's like saying the Apple Watch is the best available digital watch.
Also
don't care.
Also are you saying you don't ever use styluses?
No.
Here you go. So the... I'm going to cut them to kind here. So the the Surface Go has Intel's Pentium Gold 4415Y processor,
excellent,
which is not famous. But then again, debatably neither is the M3 that is actually in the cheapest Surface Pro, which itself is an underpowered mobile processor. So be interesting to get this in for review because we want to see how it performs. But really, like the great thing about the iPad, which we've always talked about, is that it is a quote-unquote cheap tablet, but with iOS, and you just download apps, people know where they stand. Yeah. You play Netflix,
my grand can use it.
Yeah, you move money over, whatever. But like the Surface, it will still run Windows. And I just think that the Microsoft Store is stunted enough, consumer facing as it is, it's not as friendly to get into. People still don't really understand the idea of applications. I mean, I know that we know what an application is, but if you can see where I'm coming from, the actual little bubbles on a home screen. Mm. You don't get that on a tablet, and people are like, well, where's the mouse? Where's the keyboard? And you're like, you have to buy those separately. So also it comes with Windows 10 S, which is a Microsoft's kind of locked down version of Windows where you can only download like Windows approved apps from the store.
Mm.
And I'm not even sure if you can pay to upgrade to Windows 10 Home, which you still have to do on most of their products. So, I mean,
I see what you mean about like not knowing who it's for, because like I think the Surface, because of the kickstand and the keyboard, although you have to buy it, is actually quite a useful kind of work device if you're on the move a lot. But if this is like a cheaper version, it's like, am I going to buy this to work on, or am I going to actually, if I'm going to be working on it a lot, just go for the Pro?
Exactly, because they've toyed with kind of trying to segment the line before. So they had the Surface Pro, which is a few years ago, and that's basically what this thing now looks like.
Yeah.
But around the same time, they tried the Surface RT, which was a famous failure, which was trying to do like an iPad-level Windows thing, but it ran a completely different version of Windows, which was like even worse than Windows 8, and had no app support for developers or whatever. They've done better now because there is app support, because they have this whole universal app platform, which technically, I know Windows Phone is dead, but these apps will actually run on a Windows Phone. And it's the same application, just displayed intelligently and responsively. So they do have the applications there, but then also they did the Surface, confusingly, Surface 3, which was different to the Surface Pro 3 a while back, which was a cheaper model that some people bought.
Did they ever do a 2 or a 4?
They did. Yep, they did 4, which is now just, the 5 is out, but it's just called the Surface Pro.
Fine.
Yeah.
They're not good at branding, are they?
Microsoft, weirdly, the only reason I ask is because Microsoft don't really like even numbers. So they tend to skip even numbers.
Except 98, Windows 98.
Yeah, well, that's a year.
Do you mean not? Because they skip Windows 9 to go from 8 to 10.
Windows yeah, 10. But with all their enterprise stuff, it's 3 or 5 or 7.
Oh, right. Yeah. No, there was a 4. Now it's just no numbers. So this is, yeah, Surface Go. And for that $399, you get 4 gig of RAM, 64 gigabytes of storage. So, I mean, looking at those numbers, that's more storage and RAM than you'd get for that price on most phones. Mm. But when they're expecting you to pay probably $99 for the keyboard and another $99 for the pen and $35 for a mouse, you're kind of thinking maybe that isn't enough specs for what people expect you to work on.
64 gigs, not a lot, is it? For
there will be another version with 8 gig of RAM and 128 gig of storage for $549.
Yeah, and at that price point,
but when you get into that price point, people were like, why am I buying this instead of, well, the kind of people that they're aiming at are. I still think Surface Go is quite like cheery branding, isn't it? It's like, hey, go, off you go, just get up and go.
Is the idea that they think that they've got the market share in a work environment, and then people who've got these, I think, very boring work devices are then gonna, oh, well, should I have my home device? I'll stick with the Windows thing that I'm now used to.
Yeah,
just like people used to have home computers that were PCs because they were used to them from work.
Like, why do you think they're boring?
Because they,
apart from it being Windows and you like Macs, I do kind of understand the direction you're coming from. But I mean, really, Surfaces are great, but you're really going to have to want that form factor to pay up front for all this stuff when they also sell a Windows Surface laptop, which is just a normal laptop that most people can get their head around. Mm. I don't know who's going to buy it.
No, I'm not sure who's going to buy it.
Because it's too low power to do much on. Even like I say, the lowest end Surface Pro won't really handle Photoshop above photo editing. Mm. So it's just kind of going to be like a word processor that you're going to have to drop. If it's in pounds, it will be £600 for all the bits.
Yeah, but is it for like the commuters? I can watch videos on it. I can maybe do some emails.
But you could do that on an iPad for half the price.
That's the problem. But I reckon that's what they're aiming it at. But they've not got it right with the pricing.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, to me, like the Surface Pro is something that like people get if they like the idea of a portable Windows machine. But it's also kind of straying into that Ultrabook territory where companies who don't want to have Macs will give the Surface Pros to their CEOs because they think it looks flash.
Sure.
And it's kind of something to whip out in a meeting.
Yeah.
But maybe that's my blinkered view of the market. I don't know. But it has been released in the US as a consumer product. So I don't know. I just think it'll be interesting to see where it goes because Windows tablets are not a big market outside of Surface. And even then, it's kind of sold as a laptop.
And you said you are interested in getting your hands on it and trying it, but the fact that they haven't even announced when they're going to release this in Europe, does that mean that's not going to happen anytime soon?
No, this is a very hushed overnight thing with a US release. It will come out in the it will come out in the UK, not sure when, but I mean, we'll see. I've only had a morning to gather my thoughts on it.
I'm gonna I'm also gonna blindside David here because while we're talking about tablets, I wanted to briefly talk about the new iPad rumors because it looks really super interesting. So it looks like an iPhone 10, but in tablet form. So it's got the bezel.
The ongoing rumors of the iPad Pro.
Yeah.
I do not understand why Apple, and please correct me, would put a notch on a tablet.
Yeah,
the whole point of a notch on a phone is to increase the space of a smaller device.
They've almost embraced that as a brand.
Surely that's not true.
Exactly, yeah. So it doesn't make any sense practically. But
if it's true.
A lot of people thought when they got to the home button, the recognisable shape of a phone, of an iPhone, the sort of iconic image is your little home button at the bottom. And they took that away and it just became a generic rectangle.
Yeah.
And as you said, they own the fact they sort of needed to have a space for the sensors. It is possible as a brand extension. I don't think they're going to do it like that, though, because it looks ugly.
And, like, that tiny bit of screen that you gain does not make a difference on a 10-inch iPad.
No, not really.
Like, there's two tiny little strips around the side.
It sort of fits in as a consistency thing, an interface consistency, where they're going to start splitting the top of iOS into the time at one point and the icons at the other. If that's something that people are used to.
I reckon they won't do it, though, because, like,
yeah, I didn't know
it. They're doing it rumoured on the iPad Pro, and that's the thing that they expect most people to buy the keyboard for and use in landscape. Surely they won't have.
Oh yeah, it would look hideous.
They won't have a notch in portrait mode that you can then put sideways, and then won't.
Yeah, that hadn't even occurred to me. So I have an iPhone 8 Plus. What's the iPhone 10 like in landscape? Isn't that look hideous?
You can have it either way. that it will just go up to where the notch starts.
Yeah.
But in most videos, it will actually just display full screen, but then you'll just have that cut out.
That's not
they
nice.
They won't do it for the iPad Pro. And if they did, they'd do it landscape, which is even weirder.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird way of doing it.
So I think it will have Face ID, and I don't know how that would work in different orientations. Because at the moment, iPhone X is pretty good for the Face ID, but you have to hold it portrait.
Well, yeah, and you mainly just use it for unlocking. And I think you generally unlock in portrait orientation.
Yeah.
But we don't really know where the iPad situation is going, because they've had one new iPad this year, and that leaves it a bit open. Because with the iPhones, you know what you're getting. September, new iPhones, that's your lot.
Yeah.
But the iPads, they just sort of, oh, I think we'll just release an iPad now. So maybe.
Cool. I forgot to ask a question on Charlotte's round. Jeremy Wright, or Michael Wright.
What?
Don't get it.
Yeah.
Jeremy Wright.
Yeah.
Or Jeremy Wrong.
Okay, that's better.
In that it makes any sense.
Jeremy probably right for now.
Jeremy, safe pair of hands. Jeremy Dull.
Brilliant.
Jeremy Wright, because there's enough pessimism about this government.
Yeah. And Surface Go or Surface No.
You can't tell you just made these
up. After rubbishing it for 10 minutes, I think it's a really cool idea. I just don't think anyone will buy it. So Surface Go for me.
Fine.
Surface No.
Obviously.
Gotta be, yeah.
Yeah. No, Surface No.
Bro. All right, quick break, and then we're going to talk about Musk again.
God.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
David Price.
Hello.
What's he been doing now? What has everyone's favourite South African megalomaniac been up to?
So I'm really cautious about this topic because...
Because you're uninformed.
I've been partly... when has that ever held me back before? It's partly because it's a really scary situation and...
Not to be made light of.
And probably not to be made light of. And also because the things that he's done, it's really open to interpretation. So I think when we're talking about this, it's possible he's doing these for the best reasons. I just think bearing in mind all the things he's done in the past, it's probably not. Sure. It's probably just about him. So just to cover the ground, there is... a situation in Thailand where some young lads in a football team got trapped in an underwater cave. Absolutely terrifying situation. The latest news I've got is that, and hopefully when you hear this, they'll all be safe. The latest news I've got is that 11 have been rescued and there's one boy left inside and the coach and a doctor and some Navy SEALs still inside. And this is an incredible, incredible rescue that's going on. Incredibly brave people. Like, you know, one of the Navy SEALs... well-known now, died rescuing people. I don't know his name, and I've not put a lot of research into this anyway, but I don't think anyone's going to know his name after, you know, a couple of weeks, even if they know it now, whereas everybody knows that Elon Musk, famously, he's been tweeting about it, he's been building a submarine to rescue them, which he's now taken over to Thailand. They've said, no, that's not practical. And he's tweeted again, saying, well, I'll leave it behind in case it's useful in the future.
Brilliant.
Like in the next cave rescue, which apparently will be in a perfectly cylindrical cave, which this ridiculous, clunky submarine can fit in.
So when people get stuck in his Hyperloop, he can send it down there.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, the whole thing is... Like I said,
hasn't he got better things to be doing? I mean,
apparently probably not.
Than just looking at the news. Like, I don't know, maybe making Tesla successful.
Yeah, maybe like actually sorting out their production issues at Tesla.
Yeah, like, oh, I don't know.
Just quickly, the Navy SEAL's name was Saman Gunan.
And actually, I think in our Shelton tech world, we think Musk is the story, but actually, that SEAL has been all over like BBC News app.
Mm. I've seen his face.
And then, like the Musk news isn't, because it's not news, but because we follow, you know, our tech circles, he's been like mocked. CNET did a whole piece about how he's an idiot.
Yeah,
but maybe he isn't. You know, maybe he did mean to, and it's possible this would have worked, but he didn't.
The problem is obviously it's a reputational thing. So Musk has been known to court attention in the past, and I saw a great tweet that was like, would the man that fired a car into space do something like this for attention?
It's a weird one. It sounds like if you have the technology to do it and you prove to some people that you have done it, and then you just send it over and don't ask for anything in return. But he's not really looking for praise, is he? I think he might genuinely think he can help.
Mm.
But he has a messiah complex.
He does this all the time. Yes, he did this. This is how Hyperloop became a thing. He was like, oh, I've thought of this way that we can transform transportation, but I don't have enough time to do it, so I'm just going to leave it here and hope that someone picks it up. And then luckily unluckily people like Richard Branson pick it up and put their brand to it.
I saw a little thing going on Twitter about Hyperloop as well. Sorry, just... Because it was kind of boasting about the numbers of people that could transport a certain distance in a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
And I think it was that Alex Hearn at The Guardian was like tweeting numbers, being like, that's like less than what the Central Line takes to Heathrow every morning.
Mm. No, it was like it was like one like... coach of the Central Line at like peak times.
It could do like they could do several thousands more than what he was saying in that time for like, you know, £3 each way.
Because he views everything through the viewpoint of a pampered billionaire.
Yeah. Mm.
And he has these weird pathologies about being put in public transport.
Yeah.
He had that thing where he said that nobody likes public transport. Yeah. I mean, why would he ever need to be in public transport? Mm-hmm. And then somebody responded and said, you know, that's because he's rich and he doesn't have to mix with other people.
Yeah.
And then his response was just, you're an idiot. And that's, he's so defensive and so pathological, I think is genuinely the right word for the way he approaches the world. And sometimes his pathologies will result in good things for humanity.
Yeah.
And I'm always having this debate with my brother, who is a philosopher, about whether it's better for somebody to do good things anyway, even though they have bad intentions.
At the end, justify the means.
Yeah, which is sort of his approach. He's saying, well, if you have people like this who try and extend the lifetime of humans and colonize Mars and, you know, reduce energy inefficiencies in transport, all the rest of it, he says that's a good thing, even though he's manifestly doing it in order to fulfill his own sense of savior of humanity.
Yeah. If the alien movies taught us anything, though, is that...
Well, they taught us many things, such as if a guy is complaining of chest pains, listen to him.
Get it, run away.
I maintain that it does matter, and that if we have a certain number of resources in the world, he has cornered a lot of them to himself through weird capitalistic means, and now he gets to decide how it's done. It should be done sensibly and not in this sort of, I'm going to make a toy to fix the world because I'm James Bond.
Yeah, so just... like, without putting you too much on the spot, like, where, how did the hell did this submarine thing come about? Like, what was it like?
He built
was
it
he working
parts.
On it already, or did he literally just see the situation unfolding?
I think it was as quick as that. So, and he
that's
he
does, quite impressive.
Yeah,
considering that he can't make enough Teslas at the moment, and that's his day job.
Yeah.
He said. Well, he said that it will also work as an escape pod for a rocket. So possibly.
Oh, okay. So he's like retrofit something from SpaceX.
I'm sure they basically got some bits that are lying around and went, that would probably also work for that.
It's like I'm not doubting that it's a clever thing. And he does maintain that he was in contact with, he said, cave experts. So that he had knowledge on this, that it was likely to work.
Yeah.
And he had two different plans on the go as to stop it. He had two different plans on the go. One of them was just basically a Hyperloop underwater.
Yeah.
And the other one was this little submarine. Stop it. What was I saying? Yes, but apparently he didn't contact the right and so it just doesn't work.
That could be his new venture, CaveX.
Well, no, I mean, Hyperloop kind of is CaveX.
Yeah.
Well, the boring company.
Oh, no, the boring company, sorry. Hyperloop's above ground.
I know what the joke is, but it is fucking boring, isn't it? Why has he managed to become... Like, he doesn't really have, like, an equivalent, does he? Why do we pay so much attention to
the
him?
The tech press are obsessed with him. Everything he does.
I don't even dislike him, really. I'm just indifferent to... I think space travel is amazing and fascinating, but I just think the way that it might not even be must, the way that it's covered by the tech press in such at the same time fawning but also disparaging nature. It's like, why doesn't he have any equivalents in the
He seems to attract that sort of either completely fawning or completely mocking tone of reaction.
But I don't understand either, because he's just so boring.
I feel a bit ambivalent about him. I think, he probably is doing some things that are quite interesting and inspirational. But then, there's like allegations of worker mistreatment at some of the Tesla factories, and I think
his approach to journalism is pretty terrible. I think he's got some
issues.
I think it's difficult to overlook his attitude towards journalists and the way he gets covered.
Yes.
Without being too inside baseball, like if someone's attacking your industry and you've got the ability to maybe criticize them, then you're going to criticize them.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with Trump. Like it kind of pokes the bear. So you're like, okay, we're just going to make sure that we do the best possible job we can of calling you out.
There are kind of echoes of Trump here, like a man with far too much money who is like trying to be loved. Whereas like people like Jeff Bezos just keep quiet, do probably very horrible things, but he doesn't really care what people think of him.
But he loves journalism. So,
yeah, supposedly.
He's actually bothered to support it financially. So, yeah. But I think Musk doesn't really understand journalism. I mean, he doesn't really... He thinks that it's all sort of like people are out to get me rather than...
He thinks all the criticism is being funded by big oil.
Yeah, he's not able to understand that there could be legitimate concerns.
I think he needs to look at the journalists that he's criticising's bank accounts and realise that they are not being bankrolled by big oil.
Yeah, if big oil wants to bankroll me to attack Elon Musk, then,
I'm not throwing my ethics to the wind. But my email.
But yeah, I mean, it's almost like a very immature way of looking at how to like be adored, because he'll see a major world potentially tragedy, but it looks like it's not going to be, thankfully, and then throw money at it and be like, let's just see if people love me for this. And then then he just has a go at those people on Twitter when they question his motives.
It's I don't know. Like I said, he's got issues. I think that much is clear.
Yeah. But thank heavens it didn't need a billionaire to fix it.
Yes.
Yeah. Lots of qualified professionals who were already doing the job.
Sometimes you just need people who know what they're doing to diligently do what they're doing.
You need more cave experts.
Yeah.
You're very tickled by that. I like that.
Cool, Charlotte, I know you need to go, so we're going to wrap things up. I do not have a pithy Elon Musk thing. I didn't have a pithy anything, really, did I?
You've got to do something to do with cave expert, haven't you? Cave expert.
Yeah, who is our savior? Cave experts or Elon Musk? David Price.
Cave experts.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah, it's clearly cave experts.
Yeah, my money's behind CaveX.
His next venture will be CaveX. Thank you very much for joining us for a typically woolly edition of the UK Tech Weekly podcast. We are quickly approaching our 100th episode, so if you have stuck with us this far, thank you very much. Tell your friends, like and subscribe. We will see you next week. Thanks, bye.
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 UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.